This is SG2 Perspectives, a conversation with industry experts and SG2 thought leaders about the biggest trends in healthcare and what we all expect that's going to mean for the future of healthcare delivery.
If we can assume that the techniques that we're using today are successful in preventing the spread of COVID-19, then we can also assume that they would be successful in preventing the spread of other hospital-associated infections, and that's a problem we continue to wrestle with before COVID, and we continue to do so today. I think by making this new healthcare norm the normal, demand for these types of items will stabilize.
Welcome to SG2 Perspectives. I'm your host, Kelly Richard, and today we'll be talking about a topic that most of our audience probably had not given too much thought to prior to COVID-19, and that is supply chain resiliency. With me today, we have Dr. Blaine Schilling, physician and senior principal at Vizient, and Mark Larson, principal on the SG2 intelligence team. Thank you both for coming on today.
Thank you.
And just in full disclosure, Dr. Schilling has already appeared on Dr. Tom Villanueva's Modern Practice podcast. And if you'd like to listen from a more clinical perspective, feel free to give that one a listen as well. Today, we'll probably focus a little bit more from the strategic perspective. Let's do a quick round of introductions for our guests. Dr. Schilling, tell us a little about your role at Vizient and the work that you do.
Thanks, Kelly. I have been with Vizient for 15 years. I've had several roles over that time, but my primary role now is to lead the team of clinical value quality analysis and clinical supply chain integration subject matter experts. They help our members during our consulting agents to evaluate and, when necessary, improve the care that they provide.
Excellent. Thank you, Mark.
Thanks, Kelly. And I work in the strategy area and really focus a lot on the collaboration with SG2 clients to really solve their future healthcare challenges and opportunities and lead presentations, conduct research on enterprise strategy topics. My subject matter expertise is in cost as well as access strategy, you know, really helping SG2 and Vizient clients navigate the rapidly changing system of care landscape and care shifts from inpatient to outpatient cross settings.
Great. And just to level set here for us strategy people, supply chain resiliency has probably largely been out of scope for us. How would health systems have traditionally approached purchasing supplies, pharmaceuticals, and medical devices?
Traditionally, things are all over the board with healthcare purchasing, but many systems have made progress toward valuing supplies based on their total contribution to healthcare and cost, and particularly the outcomes associated with the healthcare they provide. It's actually very hard to value the total cost of healthcare itself, much less how the individual supply items fit in. So you got to have accurate cost and outcomes data and integrate that into your decision making. And that's a very complex endeavor. Traditionally, health systems have resorted to approaching the purchase of supplies and pharmaceuticals and medical devices by that easiest understood of metrics, product cost.
In the past, supply chain was really thought of more as something where you're dealing with commodities, and there's likely a few weaknesses there when you're thinking about products that need to perform and where you're looking for high value. When you're thinking about the vulnerabilities in that traditional supply chain, what would you say that they are, even before COVID-19 hit?
If we don't recognize how our supplies, pharmaceuticals, and our devices contribute to our healthcare outcomes, then we run the risk of passing over the most efficacious items in favor of those that are least costly. Now, cost does remain a significant consideration. We can't get around that, but it can't continue to be the only consideration. We found that out during the recent past drug shortages, not just during the COVID epidemic. And we discovered that continuing to pursue cost reductions contributed not only to the volume of items that were there, but the location of the sourcing of very significant clinical items. And that left us very vulnerable in our abilities to provide healthcare.
So let's dig into a little bit more the gaps in the supply chain resiliency that were revealed during the COVID-19 crisis. How can health systems, or what can they do in the future to mitigate some of those supply shortages that we started to see for either future virus surges or other crises?
We realize that we don't have the ability to ramp up. We don't have the ability to provide sourcing of vital items, specifically PPE or personal protective equipment, or some pharmaceuticals that are necessary. In a epidemic type situation, or as we experienced over a couple of years ago, when we had a hurricane that wiped out a significant portion of our IV fluid supplies, we recognize that unpredictable supply and demand situations can occur. And when that happens, we need to find a way to stabilize that demand in order to be able to predict live production. One way that we'll be able to do this, we'll be able to make whatever the new norm is currently for PPE and infection control, we need to make that permanent. If we can assume that the techniques that we're using today are successful in preventing the spread of COVID-19, then we can also assume that they would be successful in preventing the spread of other hospital-associated infections. And that's a problem we continue to wrestle with before COVID. I think by making this new healthcare norm the normal, demand for these types of items will stabilize, and then our supply will then be able to be predicted and met.
It's such a difficult situation to try to predict unknown futures. But the reality is if we can better engineer almost fault-tolerant supply channels that really help us prepare for some of those critical elements of the critical situations that occur, that we're going to be ready to go. And one of the things that we learned is the organizations that had at least some fault tolerance with the PPE supplies from past epidemics that they were preparing for were much better equipped for some of the things that happened in the supply chain due to COVID-19.
Even though we're thinking about stabilizing the demand to a degree, and I think even if we get away from some of the price gouging that took place for PPE in the midst of the pandemic, when we didn't really have a sustainable supply chain, I guess the issue here is that health systems are struggling right now financially, and using that much more PPE is going to be an additional cost. What are your thoughts on how they're really going to be able to absorb that moving forward?
That's going to be a difficult situation to maneuver. I think it's important to recognize that there is a significant amount of cost that occurs associated with hospital-associated infections every year. And we're talking about instituting a norm that not only prevents the transmission of COVID, but would prevent the spread and transmission of other hospital-associated infections as well. 10 years ago, the CDC estimated the cost of HAIs to be over $30 billion. And more recently, those estimates have approached $100 billion. If we can continue this infection control momentum that started because of COVID-19, we should also see the impact across all types of HIAs and associated cost savings, decreased length of stay, and particularly we might even see some lives saved associated with the prevention of these infections. I think we can then funnel those savings into the actual cost of providing the PPE and providing for the safety that we're trying to get to.
What I'm hearing here is increased quality and reduced cost. And immediately I start thinking about value-based care contracts. Is there a role for supply chain to be integrated into negotiating those types of contracts?
Absolutely. There are value-based outcome contracts from our insurance providers today, both private and public sector value-based contracts. And there are even some vendors that are beginning to stand behind their products with an outcome-type guarantee. As consumers, you wouldn't buy a consumer-based product without some guarantee that it's going to function the way you expected it to. So as consumers of healthcare, we should expect the same of our healthcare products. The supply chain that is integrated with its clinicians can follow and should follow the outcomes associated with their purchases and be quick to change course should the anticipated performance not be met, and then take that decision back to the original manufacturers or your original insurance providers and explain what happened. And that feedback can be used to improve the quality of the products that are being used.
And Kelly, from a strategy perspective, I think a lot of organizations are truly trying to figure out, should they develop these value-based arrangements with some of the vendors, whether they be pharma vendors really trying to prevent chronic conditions, managing them out of a hospital, or device manufacturers as well. And really, when you're considering these value-based deals, organizations really should think of a few things. First of all, is the juice really worth the squeeze? Do you have enough volumes with that particular vendor to make the savings really worth your while? Because it does cost a lot to measure and monitor these programs. Do you have the ability to measure cost savings? Can you measure them, these long-term outcomes? Because a lot of the cost savings really comes down the road when the patient leaves the hospital or leaves your system of care with a new device or a new drug therapy. And then the third thing is really thinking about picking a trusted vendor that will be willing to adapt as solutions and care delivery changes and these value-based programs really evolve. And we've seen some remarkable studies and savings going along with these. It all goes back to volume and being able to generate enough dollars to make the programs worthwhile.
Mark, that's a great point regarding measuring the cost savings here. Dr. Schilling, is that something that you come across in your work? How do you normally advise that organizations measure savings when it comes to looking at supply chain?
it's relatively easy to measure cost savings as an ROI based on either historic changes that we've seen maybe in other facilities or in other initiatives that we've done within a certain facility. It's a lot harder, though, to do it retrospectively. That's going to be a significant process. We're going to have to find a way to help our facilities do that. Our facilities need to be able to look at the use of a supply, compare the cost of that supply with the expected outcome associated with the use of that supply. And if it's not happening, then we need to change direction in the supplies that we're using. It brings us back to the idea of integrating the clinical decision makers and end users into the supply chain process and going beyond just the cost, but looking at the overall value to the healthcare.
And taking a little bit of a step back, even just from the crisis, but really focusing on the who here. So there appears to be a value in including both clinical and strategic people within the organization in supply chain beyond just the operations folks. Dr. Schilling, can you talk a little bit about the importance of clinical input in the supply chain decision-making process?
Historically, supply chain offices made decisions about sourcing and brought those decisions to the physicians. For many items, that would be inconsequential. A lot of things, the physicians don't have an input, and the effectiveness of items across brands and manufacturers won't change. But for many other items, the clinical input of physicians and other clinical end users could alter that decision for the improvement of quality. I liken this idea to what we've known as a well-functioning pharmacy and therapeutic committee that many hospitals have and have been existing in these hospital pharmacies for decades. And these committees include physicians and other end users who review the clinical evidence that supports the usage along with the cost and then make decisions based on the total impact to care and not just the cost. We should be doing the same thing with supplies, bringing sourcing, clinical, and finances together to make a decision that is more encompassing on its impact to healthcare outcomes.
Mark, what is the role of strategy in supply chain?
Working with SG2 clients, we really know the importance of a good strategic plan for sure. That's the planning for the volumes down the road. Sometimes these vulnerabilities really impact the ability to strategically execute, right? And when you think about supply chain, a lot of the limits on PPE really restricted our ability to achieve some of the growth volumes that we had planned for 2020. So strategic execution is really gaining heightened attention, and it also is tied together with this shortened planning cycles that we're seeing across many organizations just due to the uncertainties that COVID has brought. Now is a great time for strategy to get involved, to understand future supply chain resiliency risks, and kind of the potential around the impact to enterprise strategy. And I think there's three things that from a strategic perspective could be focused on is, first of all, involve your service line clinical leaders. Dr. Schilling talked about the value of bringing the medical officers, but also even the folks on the service lines, the clinical leaders, to really provide that cross continuum understanding of how those critical supplies are used and ensure that clinical care and patient and caregiver safety is not disrupted. And certainly that's a good approach for any healthcare enterprise, but also from a strategy perspective, getting those service line leaders who really understand that cross continuum perspective involved really helps kind of identify where are some of those safety stores for clinical supplies, and is there opportunity to bring those together to potentially reduce unnecessary storage of supplies, especially for PPE that became restricted during COVID. Also identifying those differences in infection risks across sites and procedures. You know, are there some opportunities to use perhaps some different supplies where the acuity is not as high? And then during the COVID crisis, creating solutions on how and what types of supplies can be utilized when the disruption occurs. It's very hard, obviously, to do that without that clinical expertise. And then the last thing that strategy can become involved in is really helping to support some of the investments and analytics to help both the supply chain team, as well as clinicians across the organization, identify the services that really are at the greatest risk due to supply chain disruption and areas where supply chain redundancies may need to be built into the process to make sure critical supplies flow and we can keep the patient's clinical needs met during a crisis situation.
It almost seems to me as though strategy in some ways is almost the missing piece here. Mark, you talked a little bit about a shortened planning cycle. And one way that we're starting to see a lot of organizations pivot quickly is through partnerships. I was just curious, Dr. Schilling, if you've seen any new partnerships with vendors. When I typically talk to vendors about this and they're trying to partner with health systems on the value side, they don't know who to talk to and they don't know how to start that conversation. Just curious if you're seeing any renewed interest or any new conversations happening between vendors and health systems.
It's interesting that vendors are actually excited about the idea of being able to prove the clinical value of their products and get past the idea of cost. Everyone wants to provide value. That's quality divided by cost. That's the equation that equals value. So you can either improve the quality associated with it or you can decrease the cost. My opinion is that we can find opportunities to maybe even invest more in healthcare costs to be able to get a better long-term outcome, and that the increased cost will be small compared to the improvement in quality and the associated cost savings with the increased quality that we'll be able to get. Vendors are excited about getting behind that. Many vendors approach clinicians with almost a fervor bordering on evangelism around their product. And now to have the opportunity to prove the clinical value of their product, that gets them very excited.
Right. So it's all sort of coming full circle in terms of the integration here on the clinical side, the strategic side, the financial side, as well as the operational side. So is there anything else that I should be asking you about how health systems can get involved in supply chain resiliency from more of a strategic perspective?
I think a question that needs to be answered for the folks that are listening to this podcast is, how do they get started? Where do they begin when they try to integrate their supply chain or operations with their clinical operations? And I think the answer to that would be to do a very critical assessment of how physicians are involved. Being able to include physicians in the decision-making process means that you need to incentivize them. And when I say that, I don't necessarily mean money. Physicians are interested in improving the quality of their care. If you can get a physician engaged in improving quality of care through the choice of supplies that are used, I think that's a great place to start in integrating the quality and the supply chain organizations.
And Kelly, we've been saying for a while that moving and care redesign requires that clinical leadership. It often is not a successful program if you don't have good physician leadership or nurse leadership to make it happen. They understand the operations. They understand the patients. Supply chain is becoming very similar to that. It's essential to get the individuals involved that really understand how clinical care is provided. And we honestly can't afford to have operations down like we did during COVID earlier. But having that supply chain moving, supporting clinical care is so critical. And it really needs to be part of the understanding and the strategy around making sure we have those redundancies built into the system, making sure supply chain is as fault tolerant as possible so that we don't have to sacrifice clinical care, clinical volumes down the road when other crises hit.
Well, thank you both for coming on to the podcast today.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for listening, and please subscribe or follow if you want to hear more. I also want to recommend another Vizient podcast, The Modern Practice. It is on Vizient's medical leadership channel and provides a clinical perspective into current issues affecting healthcare today.
This has been another great episode of SG2 Perspectives, where industry experts and SG2 thought leaders explore the drivers of tomorrow's healthcare strategies to inform today's decision makers. Contact us anytime by sending an email to sg2perspectives@sg2.com. We'd love to hear from you. SG2 revolutionized healthcare demand forecasting with the Impact of Change forecast, and today, we're the industry's premier strategy advisory firm. To learn more, visit sg2.com. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you again soon.